We're joined on the phone now by Sarah Laskow. She is a freelance writer, reporter, and editor based in New York City, and she focuses on the environment, energy, cities, climate change, and food, some of my very favorite subjects. She is also the editor of Smithsonian Smart News blog and has written for a number of pretty high-grade magazines. Welcome to the Roadhouse, Sarah.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, good. Buck and I were just talking about how digital technology has changed pretty much everything, including the way we listen to music and the way we write words and the way we do all kinds of things, including wasting time. Which brings us to what you wrote about, which is you wrote an article called Searching for the Ur Quiz, which is where did all these strange internet quizzes come from that people spend time messing around on Facebook and BuzzFeed and such?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think in the past few months, especially ever since BuzzFeed figured out how to make their quizzes go viral, at least everyone around me has been spending way too much time clicking on random answers to find out something about themselves, what Disney princess you are, what color you are, you know, some other exciting fact that you never need to know about who you are on the inside.
And may not have any particular validity or actual real science behind it.
No, not at all. I mean, I think one of the first questions that reporters like me started asking about these quizzes was, you know, is there any basis in fact from these? And the people at BuzzFeed said, you know, like there's sort of, it's an art, not a science.
It's an art, yes. Well, that's a good way to put it. So you searched back through history and kind of looked to see where these things came from, because it's not just Facebook that's made us waste time on little quizzes, is it?
Right, not at all. I mean, I think anyone who grew up reading Cosmo or 17 has wasted tons of time doing this sort of thing. And so I sort of got curious, like, who had this idea first? When did the popular media pick up this idea of personality quizzes? And my first guess was that it probably came sometime after psychology personality tests became popular. But when I started talking to people who know a lot more than I do about media history, they said it was probably even earlier than that, probably around the 1880s when women's magazines first started getting popular. And when I looked at the sort of, you know, dusty media reference books, I found some indication that that was probably true. There was a couple references to early women's magazines that had all sorts of, you know, light entertainments in them. But I think what I found was that it's hard to track down early examples of these because no one really paid that much attention to them. But you can see around World War II, and this is much better documented, that people started publishing a lot more of them in that sort of time period, and it's only gotten more popular since then.
Well, and the thing that's different now from then is that a lot of the data that you're answering into these quizzes gets sorted and collated and kept. I mean, there's a huge data mine there.
That's true. I did actually ask BuzzFeed about that as part of my reporting, and they said that they're not keeping the information right now, and they're definitely not selling it to anyone. But I think the potential is definitely there. You know, you have thousands and thousands of people clicking on data points, and you think, you know, in the end, you know that people who click on purple are also likely to click on Barbie or
right,
whatever, which is useful to somebody.
Or if you find out that your character from the movie Frozen happens to have a buyer's profile that's significantly similar to a particular manufacturer, they might like to,
right,
to know that to market to you online.
Yeah, so you have to think, like, this is just the beginning of this, and someone's going to figure out a good way to sell this data at some point.
Yeah. But there are and have been quizzes around for a long time that actually do have some scientific basis behind them. The one that you mentioned in the article was the Woodworth Psychoneurotic Inventory.
Yeah, Woodworth Psychoneurotic Inventory. It's a mouthful.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that was probably the first popular psychological test. It was developed by the American Psychological Association around World War I for the Army. The Army was interested in figuring out how individual soldiers would respond to the stresses of battle. A guy named Woodworth developed this long series of yes or no questions to suss that out, and then after the war changed it a little bit to make it applicable to anybody. And that was used for years and years and years. But, you know, again, it's like, what is the science really behind this? I think that eventually even that one was proved to not be so indicative of anything, really.
Well, it was interesting. I actually, you can go online and you can find this this inventory, and you can take the test. And I did, and I was actually rather surprised. Well, maybe not, that I came right up smack in the middle of normal.
Oh yeah, me too.
But the levels that they, or the scores that they were indicating for what would have been normal at the time that the test was given, were rather low. And I can't imagine how anybody would have not had some odd thing that's occurred to them in their life.
Yeah, no. I mean, the questions on that test are so great too, because they really betray the concerns of the early 20th century. You know, it's a lot of like, you know, do you get nervous when you walk over bridges?
Yeah.
You know? Are you unhappy being confined in small places? Like, you really, it's like all this classic, the neurotic really comes out, I think.
Well, it was interesting because I actually, on some of those questions, I have a friend who is a little neurotic, and some of those particular things were very close to home. It was kind of interesting to see that. But there's other ones that get used and you know, claimed as being rather scientific and well-organized. Myers-Briggs is one, and they may or may not have validity either.
Yeah, I mean, my favorite example of this is one, it's not really a test, but it's sort of like a psychological experiment that people often get given in Psych 101. You know, it's like any of these tests. You answer a series of questions about yourself, and the next day everyone gets a paragraph that's supposed to describe their personality based on their answers to the test. And the teacher will ask, you know, who thinks this really gets them? Everyone will raise their hand, and then it's revealed that everyone got the exact same paragraph, no matter what they said on the test. And so I think it's just like a great indication of how people just like hearing nice things about themselves, and if you give them a reason to think that it's connected back to them, like, they will find some explanation for how this paragraph, this, you know, or this Disney princess is exactly who they are.
The other thing that it does is people are really interested in hearing about themselves, and therefore the incentive to waste time. You want to hear good, positive things about yourself.
Yeah, totally.
The other thing that when I was researching this and looking at your website, one of the things that caught my eye was some of the other subjects that you write about. This is actually kind of a light thing. It's a little, you know.
Yeah, it's just a fun thing.
Fun little article. But some of the things that you write about are a little headier and a little more cutting edge, and a lot of environmental things. And I wonder if you want to just tell people a little bit about what you do and what your main subjects of study are.
Yeah, I mean, I write about all sorts of things, but for the past few years, I've done a lot of environmental reporting, and, you know, I'm interested in some of the alternative fuel stuff that's going on, both alternative sources of fossil fuels like fracking and tar sands oil, but also solar power. You know, I really love environmental stories that have a sort of weirdness to them. I don't know if you saw this one, but one of my favorite stories that I've written is about this endangered species of dung beetle that almost derailed the Keystone XL pipeline.
I did see that. It was hilarious.
I mean, you have to love that. It was basically, you know, this giant corporation stopped in its tracks by these beetles that survived by, you know, rolling up dead carcasses and burying them underground.
Yeah, and they're not out in the middle of the, you know, plains of Africa or the steppes of Siberia. They're right here in North America and kind of in the way.
They used to be all over. I mean, that's the crazy thing, right? Like, these strange little beetles used to live up the East Coast, down the East Coast, all the way up in the Midwest, and now they just live in this one little area in the Sandhills.
Mm-hmm.
Lucky for us, I guess.
Yeah. Well, those things are all very near and dear to us. You know, we were just speaking with a woman from the Lake Superior Binational Forum, and environmental issues and clean water quality, those things are all very important to us and people who live in this neighborhood. So when we're not wasting time trying to figure out which Disney princess we are always interested in that sort of thing.
Yeah, well, I'm sure there must be a "What endangered species are you?" quiz somewhere.
What invasive species are you? That's a great one. Well, I want to thank you for joining us on the Roadhouse, and I was actually thinking when we were talking that we should have a little quiz to see which city we are, and we know exactly which city you would be.
Oh, what's that?
New York City for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Manhattan. Maybe even which borough.
Oh, yeah.
Well, thanks again for joining us on the Roadhouse, and next time that we look at an internet quiz and figure out which character we are, we'll be thinking of you, Sarah.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Okay, bye.